Hey everybody, you're listening to WLXU 93.9 LPFM Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from the north side of Lexington, Kentucky. My name is Chuck, and you're listening to Bluegrass Bios. Thanks for joining us. For the first hour, we talk with Bridget Plum Ramsey from the Pritchard Committee, and here with us for the second hour in the studio is a special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, Lexington. This is Casey Allen Bryant. How are you?
Good. I'll speak on behalf of the city of Lexington and say we're pretty good. We're a little wet at the moment, but we're doing all right.
It's a little wet outside.
It is, yeah, but we'll welcome the rain. It's been hot. So Casey, you've recently been appointed as the new chair of the Lexington Fayette County Health Department.
Yes.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Now, I know they wouldn't just give that position to just anybody. So I'd love to talk to you a little bit about your background and,
kind
of your work with the health department. I know you're also a lecturer in public health and nursing at the University of Kentucky's College of Nursing.
Yes.
And congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm also the director of occupational health for Casey Wellness, Inc.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Well, I want to get into that, but sure. I want to start at the very beginning. Where are you from?
I was born in North Carolina. Great. And but I've lived most of my life in Bourbon County. Paris. I went to Paris High School. Mm-hmm. PKY, shout out.
Shout out to Paris. Yeah, we get out there, so they're listening in.
Okay.
Definitely.
But I've been in Lexington since I was 17, went to college.
Cool. That's awesome. And so you went to school at UK, correct?
I did. I received all my degrees from UK.
Great. And so you have a master's in public health and nursing.
Yes.
And a graduate certificate in gerontology.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So why gerontology?
Well, at the time, I was working as a home health nurse. Mm-hmm. Lots of geriatric patients, definitely. Obviously, lots of issues that they were encountering. Did with my graduate studies in gerontology, lot of study and elder mistreatment and behavioral factors around death and dying, because those were the patients that I was working with. So I thought this will be a great add-on to my nursing degree and my public health degree at that time for what I was doing. I don't work so much with elders now, but whenever I do get a chance, I absolutely love them.
That's great. Yeah, and you know, I really love the juxtaposition of working with the youth and then working with the elderly.
Yes. I kind of do a gamut. I don't really do too much with babies other than my own, but work with a lot of school-age children, work with a lot of people in the mental health community, the homeless community. Like I said, I would like to do more with elders. Sometimes I get a chance to, sometimes I don't.
I can understand that.
Yes.
So why did you end up deciding to get into nursing?
Well, it's a funny story. My grandmother, who passed away in February, she was carrying me down the stairs at the church in North Carolina, and she fell down the steps with me. And she hurt her leg, and we went home, and I was only like 2 years old. And she was on the couch, and she had her leg propped up, and I went to the bathroom, got some toilet paper, dipped it into the toilet, wrapped her leg in it, and said I wanted to be a nurse. I was nursing my grandmother, and I have absolutely, anybody will tell you, I've always wanted to be a nurse. That's the only thing I've ever said I wanted to be.
Well, that's amazing. Who taught you how to do that at such a young age?
Well, my grandmother was a foster mother, and most of her children were infants, but they were children with some type of physical needs. So I was always watching her care for wounds, giving medications, going back and forth to doctor's visits,
for sure.
NICUs. Then I also had an aunt here in Kentucky that was a nurse. So just a real rich history and just being around healthcare. And I just loved it. I mean, I love helping people, obviously, if I'm working in public health. Love to give of myself to others, and nursing was a perfect fit for me. Physically, it's very exhausting. And so once I went to graduate school, I kind of moved out of the floor nursing, actually one-on-one patient contact, and more into teaching and administration and that.
Certainly.
But I still get contact with folks, though, so it's okay. I still get to touch people.
I'm sure, yeah, and I know being on the floor is tough.
It's physically taxing.
My mother and my sister are both nurses.
Oh, okay.
So I certainly can understand growing up in a house completely surrounded by nurses.
Yeah.
I know it's hard work, and you know.
It's very hard work emotionally. I thought, because again, working with my grandmother all those years, I thought I was going to be a NICU nurse. That's neonatal intensive care unit nurse. My first day of clinicals on a NICU floor, they put a catheter in a baby about the size of my hand. Wow. And I almost passed out, and I thought, maybe working in ICU is not for me.
But then I had
a clinical in public health. Carol Riker, I don't know if she's listening right now, she was my clinical instructor, and I was able to go back to my high school and do some education for all the girls in my high school. Now, it's not a huge high school. It wasn't like going to Dunbar. We only had 240 students, so you say about half of that girls, about 120, but I was able to impact all of them, I feel like. So, kind of had that passion for public health, and then after I graduated, they said, hey, you know, we see that you really like it. Are you interested in working for the Good Samaritan Nursing Center, which was ran by the College of Nursing? Marcia Stanhope, Dr. Marcia Stanhope, if she's listening to, is another one of my mentors. They offered me the position, and I took it, and what that included was working in the school system with not only providing clinic services, but also health education. So that was really my first public health job. And I've been in it ever since.
Now look at where you are.
Yes, yes. And actually, the reason why I got involved with the health department, the Board of Health specifically, was because of Dr. Stanhope. She, she was my first position outside of nursing school and watched me kind of grow up, right, quote unquote. And she thought, I think you'd be a good fit for this. You're working in public health arenas, and the rest is history.
Yeah, and you know, it seems like with the health department in UK and, you know, other medical entities here in town, you know, it's the same team philosophy. We're all just trying to...
We're just trying to better the health of Lexington.
Exactly.
I mean, I wasn't born here, but again, I've been here since I was 17. My father was a policeman here for... I mean, he retired here from here. He was... policeman here for almost 25 years. So I always, and it's not that far, so I always felt like this was part of my community anyway. So it wasn't that hard for me to adopt this community, right? And I just feel like I'm here, I want to make it better as much as I can. I mean, if I can just impact one person, one center of children, one adult, whomever.
Certainly. And, you know, I think Lexington being the biggest small town in America, you know, there's definitely some tangibility to the impact that we can have.
Absolutely. And we are a great team. I mean, we're actually a small community, if you think about it. I mean, when I'm talking about community of public health workers and healthcare providers, and we all work in tandem together.
So how does UK, the College of Nursing specifically, work with the health department? Like, how is that relationship? And
absolutely. So, one, we have a lot of students who go through the health department, and so we have that relationship, that service learning kind of relationship, where our clinical students, mostly our public health students, will go through there. Also, all of the nurses in recent history that have served on the Board of Health have been from the College of Nursing. So, for example, with when we have a medical opening on the Board of Health, we will go to the American Medical Association. Same thing with nursing. If there's a nursing position open, we'll usually go through the College of Nursing for to fill that position.
So
we've always provided services, whether it be working in the clinic or providing health education. I've had students do health fairs, and of course, with me being on the board, I'm always pulling students in, flu shots, whatever.
Yeah, whatever it may be. There's a lot of health out there.
It's a lot. And so it's just to work that community together. And we get a lot of support, those of us who, from the College of Nursing, who do work with the health department. We get a lot of support from our administration.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to hear that.
Right, right. They definitely support us providing services with them.
Yeah, and so Casey, you also teach at the University of Kentucky, right?
I do.
In the College of Nursing.
I never thought I would be a teacher, but I love it.
Yeah, how do you like your experience?
I kind of fell into it. Started off teaching little kids about health, wash your hands, brush your teeth, that kind of thing. And I was like, I like this. I'm not sure if I could teach five-year-olds all day.
The attention span's a little fleeting.
And now that I have a five-year-old, I'm like, I don't know if I could do that. But when I was in graduate school, I was a teaching assistant for our public health nursing course. And I said, you know, I really like this. And then I was a graduate research assistant. And I was like, I really like academia. I never thought I would. but fell in love with it.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. So what classes are you teaching?
I get them coming and going into mm-hmm. the program. So their sophomore class, they start off as sophomores. Well, generally they're second year students, right? Some of them a third, depending on when they got into the program. Mm-hmm. And their very first class, I always like to brag, I do your very first lecture in nursing school. And I love it. It's at Wednesdays at 2:00. Feel free to stop by if you want to. I would love it. So I get them coming in, and it's a foundations class mm-hmm. teaching them about legal, social issues related to nursing, professionalism, writing style, because we are, although it's an undergraduate program, it's still a professional program. And so there's a specific type of way we want them to write mm-hmm. and to write in a professional, scientific manner. So we teach them that as well. Mm-hmm. And then leaving their senior year, their first semester senior year, their last year in the nursing program, I teach the public health nursing course. We have several options. Of course, we have the traditional students mm-hmm. who come in 18, 19 years old, okay? Mm-hmm. But then we also have our second degree option, and then we have the RN and BSN program. Mm-hmm. So those are for students who come in who already have a two-year degree from a nursing program. Mm-hmm. And so I have them as well for public health.
I see.
So it's kind of complex a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So are there a lot of folks kind of past their 20s who enroll in the College of Nursing?
Mostly for the second degree in the RN to BSN program. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a MedVet program mm-hmm. too. It's a little bit newer. It's only been around for a couple of years. And so they are generally what we consider our non-traditional students. Mm-hmm. And so for those of us out there who may be a little bit over the non-traditional age, mm-hmm. we just stick to 25 or over.
Yeah. I understand that. I think I'm in that realm as well.
We don't tease it out any more than that.
Yeah, that's okay. So what is the MedVet program? Can you explain that?
So they are students who were in the military mm-hmm. as medics. Mm-hmm. And so we bring them in, and now they want to be nurses, right?
So medical veteran.
You're right. But the thing is, they're not your traditional students, right? Yeah. I mean, they have probably more experience than a lot yeah. of us, okay?
More field work, yeah.
Definitely. So it's a program unique to their needs and support unique to their needs.
Mm, that makes sense.
It's smaller, obviously.
Yeah.
Not quite sure the number going in this year, but again, of course, we take in about 100 students every semester wow. for the traditional program. It's nowhere near as big as that, right?
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. So for folks that are just tuning in, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on WLXU 93.9, and we're talking with Casey Allen Bryant, who is the new chair of the Lexington Health Department Board. I'm sorry, I said that in a weird way. Board of Health.
It's a lot of names.
It is. So I wanted to ask you, so you're also, in addition to all of these other things you're working on, you're also working on your doctorate, right?
I am.
Wow.
I am.
So what is your emphasis on that?
Well, so it's been a little bit of a longer journey, as my husband say, the elusive PhD that I'm getting. But as you say, I stay busy doing a lot of other things as well. My chairperson is Dr. Ellen Hahn, and you've probably heard of her. Mm-hmm. She was instrumental in getting the Lexington smoking policy passed. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, working with her, I'm not going to say I have a love of smoking. No, I have a love for working with smoking-related research mm-hmm. or tobacco use-related research. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that my dissertation will be investigating workplace policies throughout Kentucky. Mm. Right now, Kentucky, obviously, we know, is not the entire state is not 100% smoke-free. Okay. But there are some workplaces who are outside of municipalities who have mandated it who voluntarily go smoke-free. Mm. So why is it that they've gone smoke-free? What are impeding other places from going voluntary smoke-free?
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. And you know, it always blows me away when I go to different counties and walk into a gas station and it'll be filled with cigarette smoke.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing because I never really, when I was growing up, I'm like, again, I'm over the 25 age range. I'm not going to tell you how much. But when I was growing up, everybody smoked everywhere. And I really didn't realize the impact it was having on me. Mm. But now living in Lexington, where I'm very seldom exposed to smoke, whenever I do go to a county that allows smoke, I start coughing, mm-hmm. my eyes start watering, definitely would be quote-unquote allergic to it now, I would say.
Yeah, do you feel like it's growing? I guess the idea of having a smoke-free workplace?
Absolutely. I mean, even when you look at different polls, there's a Kentucky Health Issues poll that's done even in Kentucky, the support for 100% smoke-free across the state has grown. Mm. I mean, it's in the 70s now. Wow. 70% of Kentucky adults support it. In Lexington and Lexington surrounding areas, so our counties, mm-hmm. I call them our little suburbs, right? it's even 82%. Wow. So it's grown a lot just over the last few years, the support for it. So, maybe we'll see it pass here in the next few years. We'll see, right? Yeah. They've tried.
Baby steps. Baby steps.
It's baby steps. It's tried it, but it always dies.
Yeah, I understand. Well, we'll see. You know, I think as more and more information gets out about the harmful effects of smoking.
Sure.
Yeah, I think just naturally it will.
Yeah, well.
We'll see.
We'll see. Of course, we have, if you can look at my bio, and of course, we still have our e-cigarettes that are out, and one of the things that the Board of Health did was pass a resolution for us to add the e-cigarettes to Lexington's smoke-free policy.
Yeah, and so what was the justification for that?
Well, because people think that, I mean, when they first came out, they were advertised as a smoking aid, right?
Certainly, yeah.
It's just a harmless water vapor, right?
Yeah.
It smells good. It smells like cotton candy. Like, what adult's really interested in cotton candy smellings?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So that's another thing. It's totally targeted towards children, but anyway.
Well, there's not a lot of research on e-cigarettes.
Well, it's not a ton of research, but what we do know, though, is that it's not just a harmless water vapor. I mean, it's a gas, and it has carcinogens in it, like formaldehyde.
Yeah.
You know, formaldehyde, what they use to preserve people's body parts.
Yeah.
You know, that formaldehyde.
Certainly.
Oh, wow. So, we know that it's not as harmless as people think, and you don't have that long-term research. So who's to know the impact of it 20 years now on person's bodies, whether it is through them smoking them themselves or through secondhand exposure to e-cigarettes.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And, you know, it was advertised as a smoking alternative, you know, a healthier alternative.
Right.
You don't have to deal with the tar and
Well, and it doesn't have smoke, right? Mm-hmm. But the nicotine, there's no consistency across brands for the amount of nicotine you get per draw.
Oh, wow.
So you really, at least with a cigarette, you know, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the one cigarette, you know, you're getting a certain amount of nicotine per that cigarette. Mm-hmm. I have had some anecdotal stories from persons in the smoking cessation world who've said that people who used e-cigarettes to quit smoking, when they go back to smoking cigarettes, that they actually smoke way more than they did beforehand.
Wow. Is it because there's more nicotine?
Right. They're getting more. It's just not the one stick, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the multiple puffs, and you don't really know how much nicotine you're getting.
Yeah.
Plus the chance of getting poisoned. I mean, you have that concentrated amount of nicotine in the e-cigarettes, and it's controversial. People still say, oh, there's nothing wrong with it. But yes, we do know that there is.
I can understand that.
And the problem is, though, is that, yes, youth smoking has dropped 10% over the last few years. However, the amount of youth that use e-cigarettes has gone up 900%.
Wow.
Because you have them in pina colada flavor, cotton candy flavor, popcorn flavor. I mean, we're adults. Are we interested in that?
Yeah.
Is that really targeted towards us?
Yeah.
No, of course not. It's for children.
Yeah, I can't think of too many 65-year-olds who want to have a pina colada e-cigarette.
No, they just probably...
There might be, you know, different strokes for different folks.
Different? But. Well, you know, I don't know. They probably both prefer the actual pina colada. But.
Yeah, that's true. So, Casey, I wanted to ask you, I know as a lecturer, you also engage with a lot of community organizations around Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
So, can you tell us a little bit about who you work with? I'm sure there's so many.
Oh, yes. I don't want to feel bad about leaving anybody out, but...
It's all right. I'll cut you off before...
Okay.
Just as an excuse.
Just kind of listing off the top of my head. I mean, they vary. The New Life Day Center on Martin Luther, close to 3rd Street, Martin Luther and 3rd Street.
Mm-hmm.
The Common Good, which is an after-school program. The Imani after-school program.
Mm-hmm.
Participation Station, which is it's not a support group, but it is a place for persons with mental illnesses to come and congregate and fellowship, and they take classes. The schools, definitely. I mean, there were a time when we were going in doing tobacco education and working with teen mom groups. I mean, I could just really go on and on.
Yeah.
There's tons of them. And We do that. Again, it's service learning because us and our students are learning about that population, but we're also providing a service.
I see. And you also work with the homeless population here in Lexington, right? In homeless shelters?
So that would mostly with New Life Day Center, which was started by Steve Polston. And it is a place where homeless persons can go during the daytime. They can get shelter. They can get some refreshments. They have van service to take them back and forth to doctor's appointments. And different referral services. So it's a great program. Also, I think you've probably seen them, the whole give money to an organization instead of giving money to panhandlers. And so you have that van that will come and pick people up who are panhandling. That is serviced through the New Life Day Center.
Oh, I see. That's great. And so what are some health issues that are facing Lexington's homeless population?
Well, I mean, of course, everybody still has the chronic issues, right? But what's unique to homeless persons are they have exposure to the elements that we don't necessarily have. So whether it's last week when it was 100 degrees, you know, they're risk for heat stroke, or in the wintertime, and we have unfortunately had deaths from people freezing to death. So those more acute illnesses from exposure, infectious diseases like tuberculosis, influenza, pneumonia. A lot of homeless persons have mental health issues. We also have homeless persons who have substance abuse disorders. And, of course, all the other chronic stuff that we see, right? Diabetes, hypertension, those kind of chronic issues.
Certainly, yeah. And I think mental health is a big issue, particularly in the homeless community. Do you feel like there are enough mental health resources here in Lexington for homeless people, or just people in general?
Well, I was going to say people in general. I really don't know. I think that's not something that's unique to Lexington.
For sure.
It's around the country.
Yeah. And do you feel like as a nurse, you know, I think there's always a, I don't know, maybe in America there's a cultural kind of, there isn't as much of an importance put on mental health as there is on physical health.
It's definitely a stigma. It's a stigma. It's one of those pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get over it, but you can't just get over it. It's an illness, just like diabetes, just like hypertension.
It's like, oh, your leg's broken. Just pull yourself up.
Just get up and go out there and mow that grass and get that job. I mean, for someone who is suffering from schizophrenia or depression or anxiety, it is as debilitating as having cancer or diabetes or the broken leg, like you said. It's the same, and so we have to kind of get it, but the stigma is there, right? I can't talk about it, especially among certain communities. It's very much stigmatized. Deal with it. Don't go anywhere and air your dirty laundry. When I'm talking about that, I'm talking about therapy. Because that's a large part of helping folks with mental illness.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people have mental illness. I mean, it's more common than what you would think.
For sure. No, without a doubt. Yeah. And I think we're just starting to have the conversation nationally. You know, I think, and you know, sometimes the motivation for why we're having that conversation is sad and tragic, but sometimes that's the only thing that will get us to have that talk.
I mean, you know, after someone has gone and shotten up a school or what have you, then we want to have the conversation. Well, where were those resources beforehand?
Preventative health.
Preventative, right. One of the things with the Affordable Care Act, more commonly known as Obamacare, is taking away the limitations on the amount of mental health visits that someone can have. And that was a big stepping stone in helping folks with mental illness, because beforehand you had a limit. And after that, you had to pay out of pocket. Now, does your insurance company ever say you can only go to the doctor so many times for your asthma? Well, no. But they did for mental health visits. And so if someone really has an acute issue, 12 visits is not going to do them. They may need to go 12 times in a month. I mean, you know, whatever they need. It just wasn't enough. And so, but now there's no limitation on the amount of times they can go. So that's helped.
Well, that's great. And yeah, how can you quantify working through a seriously debilitating mental
I'm
issue?
I'm going to cure your anxiety in 12 visits a year. Not going to happen.
That's crazy. So, well, nonetheless, maybe let's take a little break.
Sure, absolutely.
But for folks listening, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios, and we're here with Casey Allen Bryant, who is the new chair of the Lexington Fayette County Health Department. So, nonetheless, we'll be back here in a little bit. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio. We're here in the studio with Casey Allen Bryant. So, I wanted to ask you, so you've been in... basically in the public health field for 17 years.
Yes.
Yeah, which is amazing. Props, and thank you for your work.
Oh, thank you.
So I wanted to ask you, you know, what do you feel like you've learned in those 17 years that you wish you knew at the beginning? I know that's a tough question.
That is a tough question. That's one of those questions you should have emailed me ahead of time. So I could have thought about it. Wow. What have I learned in the 17 years? Don't give up. Don't give up is a big one. Environment is constantly changing. Sometimes it will swing in your favor and sometimes not. And when I mean environment, I mean all of the economic, political, social, right? It's constantly changing. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes whatever you're doing might, the current environment may be very supportive of it. Mm-hmm. And other times it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's exhausted. Yeah. So I think that's probably the biggest things in terms of public health. I mean, there's other things that I've learned as I have aged 17 years.
I can understand that. So what do you feel like are some of the biggest issues keeping Lexington unhealthy? I know the health department works very hard and working against them.
Right. I mean, there are issues that we always face, right? Mm-hmm. Tuberculosis, influenza, chronic issues, obesity, lack of physical activity, okay? But what has been really on the rise here lately have been our heroin use and overdose deaths related to not only heroin, but also from fentanyl. What we know is that fentanyl, not only by itself, but also sometimes it's cut with heroin. Account for about 47% of our overdose deaths.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And so what is fentanyl, just in general? What is
it's a type of opioid, synthetic, and they mix it with heroin. And so when people are injecting drugs into themselves, you don't really know what you're getting, which is the scary part.
Yeah.
It is not like when you go and... you have chronic pain and you are taking Tylenol and you know about how many tablets to take, however many hours, you can really regulate it, right?
Yeah.
Because you're pretty certain that what you're buying off the shelf has that, for example, 500 milligrams of extra strength Tylenol per tablet. You don't know that when you're injecting. You don't know what you're getting. You don't know the dose. You don't know what it's been mixed with. And so that's the problem.
That makes sense. And do you all see a lot of heroin addicts come in? I know you all have the needle exchange
program. We do have the needle exchange program. I mean, we don't ask them what drugs they're doing. Okay. It is a pretty much anonymous program. Persons, they come in and it's very little data because we want to keep it anonymous.
Yeah. And can you talk a little bit about the needle exchange program that the health department puts on and kind of how that got started? And
sure.
Was there any pushback?
I mean, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you're supporting drug use. Well, no, what we're trying to do is put clean needles out there to reduce our hepatitis C rates, reduce our HIV rates, reduce endocarditis, reduce cellulitis at the sites from where they're injecting with dirty needles. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Guess what? Folks are going to use drugs.
Exactly.
But they may use that same needle 1,000 times. I'll never forget when the needle exchange program first started, and we're coming up on our 2-year anniversary.
Wow,
September.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. The needles that people would bring in were used so many times that the writing was faded off of it.
Wow.
So that's very telling, right? Excuse me. Yeah. If they look, so it's an emotional topic for me.
Sure, yeah, no doubt about it. And you know, I think about I went on a trip to Vancouver, Canada.
Okay.
And so the way that Vancouver, you know, they've kind of took an experimental approach to it, and they've actually decriminalized all drugs in a 3-block radius called East Hastings.
Oh, okay.
And so within that, all of the folks that are addicted are generally gravitating towards those 3 blocks.
Sure.
And now it's an awareness that people are going to do drugs, and you know they're going to do that, regardless of if do anything.
Sure.
To try to tell them to not do it.
Sure.
Some people are addicted; they chemically have to do it.
Right.
And so. You know, their approach was, okay, well, we're going to put everything, the whole city's drug problem, in a 3-block radius so that we can give them clean needles, we can give them opportunities, you know, to deal with their addiction.
Right.
And they saw a huge boost in, you know, a huge decline.
Decline.
Yeah, in HIV.
Sure.
And diseases related to sharing needles and the whole kind of underbelly of the black market. And so, I think there are more examples that it works than folks who want to argue and say that you're encouraging people.
I mean, I just went to a conference yesterday, and what they were saying at the conference was that when you have various strategies like needle exchange programs, mm-hmm. and you put it together with also having some type of substance abuse therapy available, that you greatly reduce your hepatitis transmission rates by like 75%.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That is a lot. And, you know, the thing is that it's an anonymous program, mm-hmm. but we also have someone there available. If you want to go talk to that person about quitting, about getting into a substance abuse program, that's available for you.
Wow. And so the rehabilitation services are there and available because, you know, people are going to come there anyway.
They're going to come there anyway. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you look at programs like Louisville, I mean, we are only open at this time on Fridays, 11 to 4:30. Mm-hmm. So one afternoon a week. Mm-hmm. We are looking to expand as do our services. But if you look at programs like Louisville, where they are open pretty much every day a week and they have several sites, I mean, they have even more services mm-hmm. available to give folks who are coming in for their needle exchange.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's been successful. It's the pushback. Louisville started theirs before us, July. Theirs was either June or July of that year. And then we started ours in September.
Cool. And is there any discussion on encouraging needle exchange programs kind of in other counties and kind of modeled off of Lexington and Louisville?
Sure. The problem is that you can't use federal funding for it. Mm. So we actually use our tax dollars here to do it.
I see.
So for everybody who owns a home, 0.028% per dollar, of your home value goes to the health department.
I see.
That tax. And so that's the only monies that we're able to use for it. So if you are in smaller counties, right, mm-hmm. they just don't have the funds available. So for example, Louisville is a lot bigger than us. They have a lot more tax revenue coming in. They're able to. And also, I mean, we want to provide as many services like Narcan. I mean, it's expensive.
Yeah.
Narcan is, what did they tell me? It's pretty expensive per dose. Mm-hmm. For $4,000, you can get like 52 kits. Mm-hmm. So you can do the math on that, okay?
Yeah.
So it's pretty pricey.
It is.
Yeah. And when we also have other services that we have to provide for our citizens here.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't pour everything into this program, although we would love to expand, most definitely. And it is a goal of mine. I'd love to see another location. I'd love to see a mobile clinic, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I say clinic, but it is really a non-clinical model.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're not providing health services, so to speak. Now, definitely if somebody comes in and they have infected IV tracts,
mm-hmm.
definitely we can give them referrals to various primary care to get that taken care of. But so far as us providing clinical services to them at that location in that needle exchange program, no, it's a non-clinical model.
Mm, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, Casey, you also worked with after-school programs, and we talked about that a little bit.
Yes.
So can you tell us kind of what issues were you addressing?
You're just general. Most of the kids that we well, that I've worked with. Now, mind you, we have several faculty who do this as well, okay? But myself mostly were elementary age children. So the usual hand washing, dental care, bullying, self-esteem, just introducing the say no to drugs kind of curriculum there. Then with the high school students, we're definitely getting more into healthy relationships, so we can stop dating violence.
For sure.
Again, bullying, the more risky behaviors that teenagers will involve themselves in.
That's great. And so do you still participate in that, or are you still working with kids at all?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Not as much in the spring, definitely in the fall start, because schools are going to start back up, and be definitely getting into that a lot more.
Cool. And you're also the director of occupational health for KC Wellness?
KC Wellness, Inc. Yes, KC. I do not own the company. So it's so funny when I'm there and I answer the phone, this is KC with KC Wellness. And
they're like, oh, we're talking to the press.
No, it's not me at all. The K and the C stand for knowledge and commitment to wellness.
Great. Yeah. That makes sense.
It just so happened when they hired me that KC is my name as well.
So what is KC Wellness? Can you tell us about
it? So it's obviously a wellness company, and we go into businesses and assess their health needs on an aggregate level and address them through programming. So whether it be going in and doing screenings only, or we maybe do health coaching, seminars, fitness classes, whatever we determine with the business that they need to help reduce their numbers.
That's cool. And what advice have you given to businesses that you've gone to or advised?
Well, I mean, we're mostly
like, stop eating all those Hot Pockets in the lunchroom.
Well, you know, it's aggregate format in terms of the data that we give the decision makers.
I see.
So, but we are generally focused on the individual at the time. But when we're sitting in a meeting with our administration, the decision makers for the business, create a culture of health. So you can't say, we want all of our employees to get healthy so we can reduce our insurance costs, but yet serve them pizza and Cokes every day for dinner.
True.
So really promoting that culture of health, having healthy foods available, offering them time on the clock to exercise. And the companies that we work with who really adopt those behaviors, they're the ones that have the best results.
I'm sure.
Right?
Yeah,
so
feel the best.
Because we can tell their employees all day long, we want you to get 150 minutes of exercise a week when they're at work 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's true.
We want you to eat healthy, but guess what? We're only going to serve you fried bologna and gravy, okay?
Yeah.
So we don't want that.
Yeah, you need to run for 20 minutes, but you have to do it in 10.
Right. And then your decision makers, I mean, your employees look at you.
Uh-huh.
So guess what? You're the boss, and I know that we can't dictate what you eat, but your employees are watching you. And if they see you eating healthy every day, they're more likely to eat healthy every day.
Makes sense. Leading by example.
Leading by example. Right. So biggest piece of advice that we give to companies is creating that culture of health.
That's great. And do you all have a website or somewhere that people
can? We do.
If someone out there is in a potentially unhealthy company.
Absolutely. www.kcwell.com.
Cool. And so, KC, I think in the last few minutes that we have together, since you are the newly elected chair, congratulations.
Thank you all.
Of the Lexington Fayette Department of Health.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, what are some issues that the health department's working on right now that are prioritized?
Definitely we want to make sure that we're providing those essential health services. But beyond those, addressing our heroin epidemic is one. I mean, there are several task force that have sprung up across the city. We have some involvement, not much, because it's not an essential health service that we have to provide, but we do want to have some input into the violence here in Lexington, and it's something I'd like to see us a little bit more involved in.
Mental health is
another big one, definitely. We don't have the money that we used to. I mean, there was a time when I first joined the board, We had after school groups for teens. Mm-hmm. We had Center for Creative Living for elders.
Wow.
I mean, we provided all kinds of services. And now we have to really stick to the essentials, mm-hmm. protecting the environment, to, you know, controlling TV,
mm-hmm.
those essential services,
for sure.
making sure that we do those and do them well and providing that health education for the community.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you can, what's the saying, jack of all trade, a master of none?
Oh, yeah.
Really focusing on being a master of those essential services.
Mm-hmm. And I know with, you know, school's about to come back as well, and for any kids that are out
yes.
there begrudgingly listening,
yes.
You know, immunizations.
Immunizations are coming up. We actually just had our public health manager on the news channel. I can't remember which one off the top of my head. But she was just on there talking about our immunizations. Mm-hmm. But you can go to our website, lexingtonhealthdepartment.org, and we have lots of information for families along with clinics that we will be having for your kids to go and get their immunizations.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a new mandate on the horizon, mm-hmm. which requiring children to have the 2 hepatitis A shots.
Mm-hmm.
So just for parents to be aware of that. We also have Facebook and Twitter. So if you're out there on Facebook and Twitter, please sign up for our pages and like us and follow us. Lots of great information that we send out year round. Right now, of course, it is focusing on going back to school, mm-hmm. Sun safety. We've also just finished up our inaugural kind of farmer's market every mm-hmm. Wednesday,
yeah,
going back and forth between the two locations.
What a great idea.
It is an awesome idea, and it's gone over well. It was open from 8 to 2, but from what I understand, they were practically selling out before 2 o'clock.
Wow.
And a lot of awesome. It's obviously open to the community, but WIC, which is our Women, Infants, and Children's program,
mm-hmm.
the parents that would come to the WIC would go out straight to the farmer's market. They had vouchers mm-hmm. to go out and spend money at the farmer's market. So they were able to get fresh fruits and vegetables for their families.
Yeah, and with the Bluegrass Double Dollars program, too,
yes.
you can double the amount that you
yes.
get in your voucher.
Right, so they had up, you know, $40 at the yeah. farm. That's pretty good.
It's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, local fresh vegetables grown here in Kentucky.
Yes.
You know, yeah, I think it's an amazing partnership, and it's not only healthier for people who are buying the fruits and vegetables, but also just for our local economy and for our farmers.
Sure, sure. But, you know, but we do want to promote our local economy. I mean, whenever we have food, we generally buy local, okay?
Yeah, of course, yeah. So can you let us know again, just for folks who might want to check it out, when is the Health Department Farmers Market?
Well, the last one was this past Wednesday.
Okay.
So this was kind of the inaugural time, and so we only had 5 Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
But next year we're hoping to do it. I'm going to knock on wood here. Next year, we're hoping to do it the whole growing season. So from like May to September, October.
Cool. That's
since it went over so well this year.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm
mm-hmm.
very happy to hear that. And,
yeah.
You know, and people, you can go to the farmer's market on Saturday if you miss that one, too.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Absolutely.
You can still participate and, you know, still eligible for your Bluegrass Double Dollars, which is awesome. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, heat-related illness. I know we talked
sure.
about that. And on a day like today, it doesn't seem that important. But there's a lot of work and a lot of preventative things that can be done
sure.
to make sure that,
absolutely.
You know, heat-related illnesses, you know, sunscreen or making sure pets and kids aren't trapped in cars.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. You never want to leave your kids in locked cars, not even for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you've ever stayed inside your car, you've cut your air condition off, with even in a minute, you can notice the temperature starting to rise, especially mm-hmm. in those hot days. I mean, I think about last week when it was 90 plus, almost 100 degrees all last week. So never leaving your kids or your animals in locked cars. Bring your animals inside when it's really hot outside, making sure they have plenty of water,
mm-hmm.
making sure when your kids go out that they are plenty hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always going to promote water. That's that wellness side of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the best beverage, okay,
yeah.
for you. When you're going to be outside yourself, making sure you're drinking plenty of water, making sure you're protected in sunscreen, because, of course, we want to prevent skin cancer, okay? You don't want to pay for it 20 years from now what you're doing today, okay?
Very, very true. Very true. And, you know, breastfeeding is also a huge part
yes.
of what the health department does.
Yes,
right?
We do lots of health education mm-hmm. on just about every topic.
Mm-hmm.
Doreen Bailey is our breastfeeding breastfeeding guru over at the health department. Can talk to you way more about it than I could.
and there's an event coming up that I learned about.
In August.
Yeah, in August. On August August 5th, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So basically on August 5th at Pleasant Ridge Park, it's going to be an event kind of with breastfeeding families. I think it's a collaboration between the health department and Mindful Moms of the Bluegrass. Mm-hmm. And so it's called the Big Latch On. which is a great name, by the way. So if you're a member of a breastfeeding family or breastfeeding mother, that's August 5th from 9 to 11 at Pleasant Ridge Park, which is at 1350 Pleasant Ridge Drive. And you can go, you know, chat, talk shop.
Absolutely, which is another great reason for you to follow us on Facebook or Twitter or to get on our website, because we are constantly updating those locations with our events coming up.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, Casey, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Congratulations again on being appointed as the new chair.
Thanks so much.
That's amazing. As of July 1st.
As of July 1st, yes.
That's awesome. And so we've been talking with Casey Allen Bryant, who is the new chair of the Lexington Fayette County Health Department's Board of Health. And nonetheless, thank you so much for coming in and all the good work that you do making our town a healthier place.
Thank you so much. You have a good day. Bye, Lexington.
Thank you. And so you've been listening to Bluegrass Bios, and we'll be back next week, as we are every Friday from noon to 2. But until then, have a great Friday. Stay dry. Have a good weekend. And we'll see you soon enough. Adios.